Welcome. Today we're tackling something really important in workplace safety, something that, sadly, keeps coming up: preventing falls from height. It's a critical conversation to have. We've been looking through heightened risks, preventing falls in the workplace, and our goal today is, well, to unpack the numbers, which are quite sobering, and also explore the practical things, the strategies that actually work. We want to get to the bottom of why one particular kind of accident is still the single biggest killer in the workplace, even after all this time. Despite all the focus, it persists. It does. Working up high is, unfortunately, still one of the riskiest things people do on the job. And the figures we're about to look at really drive that home. Okay, let's deal with this. We've got the latest provisional figures from the Health and Safety Executive, in other words, the HSE here in the UK, for 2024-2025. These numbers, they're a stark reminder. Between April 2024 and March 2025, tragically, 35 workers lost their lives in Great Britain, specifically from falls from height. And the key thing here is that, unfortunately, this confirms falls from height remain the single biggest cause of fatal injuries at work. Year after year, it's the same story. Now, I did notice it's slightly down from 50 the previous year, 2023-2024, which is, well, something, I suppose. A slight reduction, yes, but the danger is clearly still very much there. 35 is still far too many. And when you look at who is most affected, it gets really interesting. Where are these happening most? Well, if you look at the bigger picture of all workplace deaths, the construction industry, maybe not surprisingly, still has the highest number overall. For 2024-2025, there were 35 deaths from all causes in construction, and falls from height, they're a huge part of that number within that industry. And there was a detail about self-employed workers too, and this is quite striking. A really significant chunk of those fatal falls, 23 out of the 35, specifically from falls, involved people who were self-employed. 23 out of 35, that's a huge proportion. It raises a big question, doesn't it? Why that group? Is there something specific going on there, like maybe different pressures or perhaps gaps in, I don't know, training or equipment access? It often points to a specific kind of vulnerability. Self-employed people, you know, they often work with fewer safety nets, both literally and, well, figuratively. They might be dealing with tighter budgets, maybe less access to regular formal safety training. Plus, there's that double pressure, getting the job done fast and managing the whole business side, so things can get missed. Critical safety steps might get overlooked or maybe compromised a bit when commercial pressures bite hard. It's definitely an area where we need tailored support and extra vigilance. These numbers are undeniably grim. It really makes you wonder, you know, with all the rules and awareness campaigns, why is this still such a stubborn problem? That really is the million-dollar question, and while the numbers are stark, the most important message, I think, is that almost all of these accidents are preventable. Preventable. Yeah, fundamentally, it boils down to, well, thinking smart, being super careful, having a good risk management culture, and just sticking to the safety basics every single time. So given that the stark numbers, the fact they're mostly preventable, what are the most powerful, practical things people and companies can do right now? What are the absolute must-dos for making work at height safer? All right. Well, it really starts with the first basic principle. Plan ahead. Every time. What does that actually look like in practice? It's not just ticking a box. It's doing a proper risk assessment before any work at height starts. You need to figure out exactly what the job involves, pinpoint the risks up high, decide the safest way to do it, and be crystal clear about who's in charge of making sure it's done safely. Getting that planning right up front avoids a lot of headaches and potentially heartaches down the line. But even the best plan needs the right tools, right? Like, you wouldn't use a wobbly chair to change a light bulb at home. Well, you shouldn't. And the same applies, only with much higher stakes at work. So the second principle is use the right gear always. And this means more than just having gear. The equipment, ladders, scaffolds, mobile platforms, harnesses, whatever it is, it has to be the right type for that specific job and that specific place. And crucially, it has to be in tip-top condition. That means regular checks, proper maintenance, absolutely no shortcuts here. The gear has to be reliable. Plan ahead, use the right gear. The third one is all about the people involved. Get trained and be smart. Knowledge is power, as they say, especially when it comes to safety. Everyone who works at height needs to know what they're doing. They need proper training. What does proper training cover? It means understanding the risks involved, knowing exactly how to use the equipment correctly, and, this is really important, feeling empowered to speak up. Speak up if something doesn't feel right. Not being afraid to stop work or question something if it seems unsafe. The challenge is making sure that training sticks, you know, especially when people are under pressure to get the job done quickly. We need a culture where raising a safety concern is always okay. That culture point is key. Now, I know safety pros often use a kind of mental checklist, a framework, to help with this. Yes, there's a really neat little trick, or rather a systematic approach they use. It's often called the Avoid, Prevent, Minimize, APM for short. APM, Avoid, Prevent, Minimize. How does that work? Well, what's clever about it is the order. It forces you to think in a hierarchy. Don't just jump to the last resort. Okay, so don't just hand out harnesses first thing. You first try to avoid the risk altogether. Then you try to prevent a fall if you can't avoid going up. And only then do you think about minimizing the consequences if a fall still might happen. It shifts the focus from how do we survive a fall to how do we stop the fall happening in the first place. Here are some examples. How does avoid work? Okay, avoid. The first question is always, can we do this job without anyone going up high at all? Like using a drone, or maybe using tools with long handles for cleaning, like the reach and wash system for window cleaners, or painting at height, anything that keeps boots firmly on the ground. Okay, avoid first. What if you have to go up? Then you move to prevent. If working at height is unavoidable, how do we stop a fall from happening? This means putting measures in place that make falling really, really hard to do. Like scaffolding. Sturdy scaffolding with proper guardrails, or maybe using a mobile elevating work platform like a cherry picker that has guardrails all around. It's about creating a safe working platform, engineering the fall hazard out. So avoid, then prevent. The last step, minimize. So even with the best prevention plan, sometimes there's still a small residual risk. If a fall might still happen despite everything, how do we reduce the chance of serious injury? This is where the harnesses come in. This is where things like safety nets below the work area come in, or airbags, or personal fall arrest systems. That's your harness connected to a lanyard and anchor point. These are designed to catch you or stop you before things get critical, absorbing the impact. They're the last line of defense. Avoid, prevent, minimize. A logical way to think about it. What's fascinating is how these steps cover the whole spectrum, from completely removing the risk to just managing the potential outcome. And understanding this, for you listening, it really empowers you, doesn't it, to see if these steps are being followed, to ask questions, and to help make sure work is done safely, whether it's you doing it or colleagues around you. It's about making safety part of the culture, not just a rule book. So as we wrap this up, it's worth remembering, isn't it, that these aren't just statistics, they're people, they're families, friends, communities affected by these tragedies. That's the bottom line.